I just thought it was hilarious. I know that you know that you know that I know, and Kyle and Bob Sala got turned into Sean McVay and Chris Shula like 3 weeks after they did the same thing. This dick measuring contest stuff, Jake, it's trying, and it looks awful when you have to rewatch it.
Yeah, it was sad to watch. I'm not through grading it because I'm actually exhausted, and I think it's making me sick. I feel like I literally am getting sick, and I think this game is part of it.
Yeah.
It's just really painful to watch because, like, when one team really excels at something, that's fun to watch, regardless of whose side it is.
Of course.
But when it's five-yard check down, corners running into each other, defensive linemen unable to get home, the other offense not really impressing all that much, guys stumbling over themselves, and it feels like the longest game we've watched all year, where the first half just never ended.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough to go back and watch.
You're saying that the Battle of Amid was not a glorious...
There were no winners. I mean, the Houston Texans won a massive game for themselves, but no one won.
I will say that I think D'Amico Ryans won this game.
That's fair.
I think that the Texans coaching staff put Kyle Shanahan and Robert Saleh in an absolute blender, because you were focusing more on defense. I spent a lot of time watching the offense here because, again, no one man should be subjected to the entirety of this game. This is why they have coordinators. And watching the offense, my takeaway was that Kyle totally outsmarted himself, totally wigged out on what the Texans could do, which is fair because the Texans defense is badass. And the Texans basically said, you can have your Christian McCaffrey dump passes all day. You can have them. And Kyle's like, I don't want them. I don't want them. I know that I've been living off of a steady diet of that, but I'm a new man. I'm a changed man. I don't want any of that. We're going to have Mac Jones lock on to 15-yard outs the entire game and not be able to complete them because our offensive line is going to get its teeth kicked in snap after snap after snap. That's what we're going to do. And they never adjusted. That was the weird part. They never adjusted.
I don't think they adjusted on either side of the ball. I think it was fundamentally on defense. You watch them just give up 5, 6, 7 yards of cushion every single play.
Yeah.
And Saleh tried some things in terms of blitzes. He dropped the DNs quite a lot into coverage, and sometimes that works. But a lot of the time what ended up happening is there would be a miscommunication or someone would fail to pick up either a tight end or a running back. That's where the Woody Marks 50-yarder Bethune just didn't pick him up. And then the same thing sort of happened on another one where it was Dalton Schultz and Mustafa just waited, and then came in way too hot and whiffed, and that was a key first down. And so it feels like, given the personnel, there was both a desire to be simplistic and also mix it up, and it just didn't feel like they had a clear, definitive identity other than to play sort of soft underneath. And without, you know, their best players at wide receiver and Christian Kirk, and I'm forgetting the other guy's name.
You mean Nico Collins?
Nico Collins.
One of the great tacticians.
Yes,
yeah, he
I
wasn't
am.
There. But you had Braxton Berrios, who...
Right, and they played it almost as if those guys were going to play, as if they were going to try and take the top off the defense, challenge them on posts. And there were a couple times they got challenged, but really... it felt like a waste of resources, a misallocation in terms of what the Texans were actually throwing at them.
It was, it's bizarre. You can't play soft zone when you don't have a pass rush. And if you can't rush the passer, then you need to do something in the secondary. And this is the Niners getting caught with their pants down a little bit, because the secondary is something that you and I, and you've really harped on this, have talked about. Like, this is a ticking time bomb. And it showed up at times, and then some weeks it looks okay. Or at least it's not exploited to the degree it could be exploited.
Right.
Michael Penix and the Falcons being the best example. And in this one, I wouldn't say it was exploited, but when you have no pass rush, you have an opportunity to at least, you know, poke some holes in the process. And that's what it looked like to me, that Houston's like, oh, I guess we'll take it.
You're gonna give Houston, it to us. I guess we'll take Houston it. Houston went heavy quite a bit. I will say Woody Marks did a fantastic job in pass protection, which was...
He's a good player. And you mentioned this on the Sunday stream. His patience in the run game, that's new. So I watched
that bought them quite a few, like a half dozen, 4 to 6 yard runs that should have been stopped at the line. Mm-hmm. One side of the line gets completely destroyed and there's nothing there. And he just waits and waits and waits and uses the Niners' aggression against them, and nobody else fills in the backside. Or,
yeah,
you know, it gives a lineman enough time to climb to the second level to get some hands on a linebacker.
Well, I think that happened a lot. Can we talk about Bethune?
Yeah, I want to talk about Bethune because I think he feels like a menace. Like, he's still, for the most part, a really dominant physical run-defending linebacker. Mm-hmm. His depth is pretty bad in coverage. You saw it on the touchdown. They were debating who it was on. It's on him, right?
He wasn't guarding anything. That space, though, that was 5 yards away from anybody. That was well covered.
And there was another one where he's, like, trying to robot, and he's sort of slowly turning his hips in slow motion, watching the crosser, but physically his mind understands that he's supposed to get there, but he's not getting there. And there's just him backpedaling. Obviously, we knew there would be a substantial drop-off between him and Fred Warner. Any linebacker, there's going to be a drop-off.
The greatest middle linebacker in pass coverage, perhaps, in the history of the game of football? Yeah.
But a lot of their scheme is sort of predicated on Fred being able to do it all, and you're seeing a lot of the limitations of that. And it's not that a lot of it was just based on the front four being able to do something.
Right.
But Bethune, I think you're seeing the limitations of what he can't do and the lack of speed, just backpedaling and getting enough depth.
Yeah, I don't want to go hard in on Bethune because, again, it's not like, oh, well, Bethune's in there, right, and that's why their defense sucked. He was just one cog in a absolutely
And this wasn't on him. This is just a part of a problem that is continuing to evolve.
I will say, though, two things. One, the defensive line was abysmal. That we can all point out how bad the defensive ends were. That's obvious. Like, it was Mykel Williams, who still doesn't have a pass rush back. And I will address the Mykel Williams thing. Right. But you all are, it is unbelievable how easily distracted.
It's also funny just the week to week nature of deciding who a player is based on their last performance.
I started off the show saying it was hilarious that Kyle got into a dick measuring contest and lost, when that's like kind of what he has done a couple of times this year. That is actually more funny, and we'll address it later on in the show because it requires some it requires a bit of separation. I don't want to muddle up the other stuff. Back with Bethune. The defensive line's doing nothing to clear it up for him. This is something we saw last year with Fred. He's smaller. And the other thing that I really, you know, so he's getting washed out again and again and again. I know he's filling the gaps. He's in the gap. It doesn't really matter, though, if the offensive lineman has him and is using him like a front-facing backpack. That's what it looked like a lot of times. The other thing is, I don't think that Bethune has the physical skill set to be a great backpedaler, but positionally, he seems a step or two in front of where he should be consistently. And what that tells me, and maybe this is a one-game thing because it really hadn't shown up in the past two games, though maybe you can make the argument in Tampa Bay, I'm giving him a pass on that one. But that tells me that because he knows that these linemen are coming to get him, that he's cheating, that he's going and he's trying to be two steps ahead. And if he's two steps ahead, then maybe he can split that gap and maybe he can get into the backfield because he knows if someone gets hands on him, it's game over for him. This is ironically, or perhaps coincidentally, something we've talked about a tremendous amount with a guy who doesn't play for this football team and their issues at hand there. Tatum Bethune is a much better football player. He provides much more value.
And he can slip those blocks, but he didn't
do it in this game.
He did a couple times, but it was after the runs 4 or 5 yards. It's a tough assignment. It's a tough assignment, but part of it, and I think we haven't talked about this enough, is right. Defensive tackle was, I think, the number one thing going into the season where we bet on this is the plan. We're going to get CJ West. We're going to get Alfred Collins, and they're going to fix our defensive tackle woes. And you've got Jordan Elliott, who's been much better than he was last year, but still up and down and is now injured.
Yep.
And you have Kalia Davis, who has one or two or three splash plays a game. And then I watched one right before we hopped on where I think it was maybe the worst rep I've ever seen from him, where he just flew about 5 yards away from the play. And
I mean,
You can't live like that if even one of your defensive tackles is half the time getting thrown out of the room.
the first inside run rep, and I try to watch the game out of sequence. I watch it by inside runs, outside runs, deep passes, short passes, zone, you know, all that stuff. So I watch it by, I watch it in cut-ups because I can't subject myself to the structure of a game. I watched the game once. I don't need to know, oh, well, they went with a pass after that. I can certainly reference that. So I just want to see what they did and be able to hone in on things. The first rep of the game, you see Kalia Davis get thrown 5 yards. I think he had multiple 5 yards out of the play things. You're like, here's your gap. You're going to cover the A gap. And he's like, what if I did the C gap, but it wasn't my choice? That happened twice now.
Go to 820 in the third quarter if you're bored and watch truly one of the worst reps I've ever seen from him.
And again, it's not to say that, oh, well, Kalia Davis had a bad game, so they had a bad game. No, it is, again, simply none of the defensive tackles played well. Not a one of them. Kevin Givens got depleted by British Brooks, a fullback, who played like one snap in the game and made it count. My God.
That man.
You don't come back from that. Like, when you're a coach after a game like that, and we don't put on our coaches' hats enough, not that we have much or any experience in the coaching realm, at least we can.
I've managed quite a few Madden franchises.
Right. As a fantasy football team owner,
I've run a program in NCAA football.
Yeah.
Although I'm more of a recruiter.
I'm more of the scheme guy. I'm just praying that we can get enough 2 stars in to make something out of this triple option offense. Regardless, that was for the 5 days that I was able to play that. Regardless, it is. I don't even remember where I was going. Coach's hat. Sorry. Coach's hat.
I got thinking
about Akron. So some coaches will put on all the bad reps. And even like that Kevin Givens one where he gets totally depleted by British Brooks third quarter, do you try to put that in there as, ha, 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 we're having fun, sometimes you get blown up, or do you never show that to anybody because it was such a bad game that there's no humor to be found? I'm fascinated to see.
I think that's a play you probably play, and you look at Kevin Givens in the face, and you let it play 2 or 3 more times. You don't say a word.
What happened here?
You just stare him and then you move on. You don't say a word because nothing needs to be said about that. But that's a tough rep to watch.
It was, and there were a lot of them, right? Like, there were, I'd say 6 or 7 before I got to that where I'm like, oh, this is negative teach tape.
And there's an element of, I mean, not an element, like a major component of this is, one, you're depleted. Fundamentally, you're depleted. That's like the number one point. But once you get to
second,
that point,
and third and fourth,
and then the offense is getting kicked off the field after 3 plays every single time. So you're dealing with a long drive. You're like, all right, we got a second to breathe here. Nope. You're back on the field and they're not going to make it a quick one. They're going to make it an ugly 11 play drive. That's going to suck for everyone involved. The crowd's never going to get into the game, but even though the Texans are only up 6 points, you've been out there for like 30 plays. You feel exhausted, and then the offense is out again. It's tough. It's tough.
Not my biggest takeaway. There were many takeaways. I actually, watching the 8 runs that they had, liked what they did in the run game. And
The Niners.
I thought they ran the ball okay. It wasn't perfect every time. It wasn't like it was big. But I thought that Christian McCaffrey looked good. I thought that I'll just go through it. They ran power, 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 split zone, another split zone, a draw and duo. End of game. Like, they ran the gap stuff. It still worked. And it was a great case in point of Kyle overthinking this thing.
Right.
And one of the criticisms that I will accept on Kyle Shanahan, who is unquestionably a great coach who had a bad game, but one of the criticisms I will accept is that he's a front runner, and that if you put him behind the sticks, metaphorically or literally, he doesn't know how to adjust. And this is why Brock Purdy is so valuable to his team, because Brock actually is pretty good as an underdog, as somebody who's playing from behind and can make something out of nothing, which Mac Jones clearly cannot do. I don't think even healthy he could do it. But he certainly can't do it now. His inability to move around in the pocket, save for, I guess I'm running this thing, these last ditch scrambles
right.
is damning. And it really screwed their offense. But Kyle being a front runner, which is something we've talked about for 7-8 years, this is a great example of that. You're down 13-0. Okay, fine. Like, honestly, I think George Kittle was right. Your defense played well enough that you had, and there was enough time left in the game that you could sneak back into this thing. Run the ball. Like, I'm not saying you need.
They ran it for 4.8 a pop on those 10 plays that they did run.
And that includes a Mac Jones scramble, which was nice, but was like one of right. should have been 12. And the Christian McCaffrey, was it supposed to be a double pass? You know,
I don't know what that was.
That was -5 yards. So if we're just talking about McCaffrey runs, there were seven of them. They were good. 7-8.
Yeah.
They were good. And they're running the gap stuff. The Texans had problems with the gap stuff. It's the front running nature of it. Kyle, they go down 7, they go down 13, and Kyle's like, oh, I guess we're going to lose then. And
I mean, this felt like what they did to the Rams on that Thursday night game where the Texans got out ahead, they slowed the game down, they wore on defense, and they kept the offense off the field, made them feel disjointed. And then by that point, and it again, at half, it's only 16-7. You have every opportunity. They
should have had a better opportunity, to be fair.
They had so many opportunities to, I mean, really, this game wasn't close whatsoever.
Right.
But they did have theoretical opportunity to say,
of course,
all right, if we put together a drive here, we can actually make something happen.
There's absolutely a world where this game, where the 49ers have the lead after the first drive of the second half. I don't know if it was a likely world that we would have lived in.
It was a theoretical possibility.
But you had, you know, the Texans hadn't punted until that point. It had been field goals and then two touchdowns, maybe two. Yep. And you get the interception from Lenore. If Lenore does the smart thing, steps out immediately. Even if Lenore doesn't do the smart thing. What if Lenore is an inch to his left when he catches that ball where he had to stay in bounds? Upon doing that, okay, the Texans were playing a softer zone. Right. And it was just four man and then dropping back in the zone. And Kyle had that thing locked in where he's running sevens on the seams. And it was Bourne and D-Rob and Jennings. They could run that play all day, every day. And it was attacking Petrie one-on-one. Like, it was a good play. And they ran it all the way to the end zone the first go around. You can do that to get into field goal range. Bam. 13. What was it? 13-10? 16-10? What was it? What was the score there? 13-10.
No, it was not 13-10.
At halftime.
It was 16-7, I think it happened.
16-7. Okay, so 16-10. You get the ball back, and it feels, I mean, there's some weight to that there. Whereas the Texans feel like, we got away with one. And then they come out, and I think they went 3-and-out on their first series. Like, I know that that's not the game. The game was much larger than that. The game certainly was controlled by the Houston Texans. But when they give you a window, you got to take it. And see if, you know, putting in that shiv can just move something in a bigger way. And they just didn't do that at all. And again, I think you're right. Like, as much as the game plan from the Houston Texans was very similar to the game plan that the Niners ran against the Atlanta Falcons last week, they kind of just used that game plan. Feel-wise, and I think almost emotionally-wise, this game was 49ers against the Rams a couple weeks back, where the Niners weaponized time of possession, dominated the ball, and turned it into a dick measuring contest.
Yeah, I think they're at a spot where this is, I think you almost have to approach it where after this week, they need to try and get a week against the Giants, a win against the Giants. We'll talk about it on Thursday.
Right.
And then you try and sort of reset fundamentally what the season is. Playing the Rams the week after and bring back Brock.
It is right here. They get one more game to scheme away these problems. After that, you need to get real weird real fast. That was my note. We are on the same page, my friend.
It's looking bleak right now. I don't know what they're going to do at defensive end fundamentally. Travis Gibson's gone. Not that he was helping it a ton, but he was at least an NFL body with experience.
Can you explain what happened with Gibson?
No. I think they just
signed him?
I forget. Somebody claimed him off the practice squad. He was out of elevations. They didn't seem that excited about him.
Dumb.
So they just,
that's dumb. That's
I
dumb.
Guess it's going to be, get ready to learn Robert Beal. Get ready to learn the Bengals. Thank you, Nevin. The Bengals.
I mean, they Well, yeah, or the Panthers.
Who cares? Does it matter?
No.
Someone picked him up.
He went to some sort of a cat.
Yeah, he's gone.
It is. Listen, the fact that we're talking about Travis Gibson as like an actual loss highlights everything. That tells you all you need to know.
Right.
That like legitimately, that's a big deal. Because William Bradley King is next up and Robert Beal is next up. And now you're asking Mike, and this is, let's just get into it now. Now you're asking a 20-year-old Mykel Williams, 20 years old, to be not just your run stopper and your fun little toy. Now you're asking him to be what, to your entire defensive line?
Yeah, to do everything, every single thing. On,
I mean, they lined him up at every technique in this game.
Yeah, I think in every game this season they've lined him up at every technique.
Yeah, he'd missed a couple of zeros, to be fair. Sure. But like, it was, it is laughable that people are now coming in and being like, oh, Mykel's not very good, is he? It's like, no, he is very good. What you've done is now you've shifted the goalposts on what you needed. The 49ers were never under any...
He was supposed to be your number three behind Bosa and Huff as a pass rusher with Yetur Gross-Matos mixed in, and now those top three guys are all out. And you had hoped, they sort of recognized pretty early that he was better at rushing interior than on the outside. Yep. And they still mix him in, but they had to play him on the outside quite a bit. And let's be clear, the Texans double-teamed him a ton, right?
What else were they going to do?
Of course. Sam O had like a few nice reps, but they don't have any interior pass rush.
They don't have any interior run stop.
They don't have any. They don't have any pass rush at all, really.
They have no pass rush. Because
it's Mykel and Sam O, who are both not elite pass rushers, but they have a few good reps.
Yeah, they got two energy guys on the outside. Effectively, they have a basketball team where everyone's a 3-and-D shooter.
And none of the stunts were effective too, because everything was slow. Like every single blitz they ran seemed a little bit predictable, and sometimes you can just criticize scheme vaguely, but sometimes it's just you're not executing because the defensive tackles not driving hard enough.
Yeah.
They just don't have enough dudes. Yeah. They just don't have enough pieces available. And no, Mykel Williams is not rushing the passer like Abdul Carter. But to say that Mykel has been anything other than very good this season is wrong. He's been very good. I've watched and graded every single snap to the point that I'm sickened by how much of this defensive line I've watched. And he has been objectively very good. And I pointed out when he hasn't been very good.
Of course.
So I don't know what people's expectations were, or if they just had a misunderstanding of who he was.
They fundamentally have a misunderstanding because they don't understand the fundamentals of football. Like, they just don't. They don't. And maybe they're dumbing it down for an audience. That's the embarrassing part, that you can't just be honest and be flat out about it and say, like, listen, is Mykel playing? Is he ascending to some level? No. But is he where he was supposed to be this entire time? Absolutely. With only more being thrown on his plate. And to defend it, this is the problem when you come in with these anchored ideas. So you and I were both very high on Mykel, me even more so than you. So now anytime I defend Mykel Williams on just merit and expectation versus reality, I come across like some entrenched homer who can't possibly see the downsides. Whereas if you plant a flag that he's bad, then anytime he does anything that has a modicum of shit, it's like, wow, what a terrible pick. What a waste at 11. By the way, you know, how's Kelvin Banks fucking looking? This is the same thing I have all the time with the offensive line. Point to me where this offensive line that you want them to be is. Show me in the NFL what offensive line you would like them to be.
Everyone would say the Colts, but that's
the Colts who traded out three dudes on their offensive line this year. That Colts team that has an international pathway guy there. Maybe that's the answer. Maybe they're not getting enough from their international pathway guys, because last year it was the Eagles. This year it's the Colts. Both of them are just stealing dudes, getting them for free on their roster and starting them at tackle. Maybe that's the answer. I think it's Alfredo Gutierrez's fault.
Right. No, I think it's fair to want more as a pass rusher. because he's clearly has a miles to go as a pass rusher. It's a very, very basic attack where it's power. I mean, he's got ways to go, but I also have seen growth in his attack, but it's also tough when offensive lines are throwing two guys at you every snap and much other push.
I think any coach who would watch this would understand that this 20 years old is being double teamed consistently since week one of the NFL season and go, oh, you must be pretty good. Do you think they throw? I mean, now it doesn't matter because there's nobody else to double team. But do you think he was getting double teamed consistently from week one to week three when Nick Bosa was on the field because he sucks or because that's some sort of tactical advantage? What are we talking about? He single-handedly, that is the incorrect word. I should be specific. But he was as fundamental as anybody in turning the Niners when they were healthy into a legitimately good run defense.
Yeah, they couldn't play the run at all last year. They just fundamentally couldn't.
And all of these things that we see with their defensive tackles now, okay, yeah, Bosa had a lot to do with it, and Fred Warner behind it makes a lot of help. It helps a lot, too. No one's arguing those points. Like, that's obvious. But the idea that Nick Bosa was on that line last year and Fred Warner was out there last year and the defensive tackles still suck, do you think these defensive tackles are good, bad, or they just had a bad game? The answer is probably they're not very good yet. They need a lot of time to come along, but Mykel Williams and Nick Bosa covered their ass, and then Mykel kept covering their ass, and then at a certain point, the asses couldn't get covered anymore because there weren't enough asses, and it's a bad metaphor, but you know where I'm going.
Yeah, I want to get to the secondary briefly, and then we can, I think, move into questions unless there's anything else you want to hit. I think the secondary just looks worse and worse every week. I think we are both huge fans of Malik Mustafa. I was extremely high on him coming out of the draft. He is coming back from knee surgery and didn't have a training camp, and it will take him time to look right. But right now, he doesn't look right in terms of his coverage. He's on the back foot. He's a step slow to trigger. Sometimes he's not a step slow to trigger, and he's downhill in a second.
Yeah.
But he does not look very comfortable right now in coverage. And I think the entire secondary generally looks uncomfortable. There were at least three times in this game that I watched a combination of Upton Stout, Renardo Green, Lenore, like, run into each other. There was just when the Texans would run trips and they would have bunch formations and get any sort of rub, the amount of times those guys ran into each other was unfathomable. There was just, I don't know what it is. And it's hard to pinpoint a problem because, again, I don't know exactly what they're running every single play. I won't pretend I do, but they're clearly having trouble executing it. I can establish that very clearly. And you looked at even just the touchdown, right, where you're like, all right, we're going to play Jair Brown. We trust him. And Shanahan, after the game, almost explicitly said, yeah, well, the safety just got beat one-on-one. That's a touchdown because Jair stopped his feet and just got beat one-on-one.
Which is, by the way, the same thing that got Marquise Siegel benched from that Tampa game. He got beat one-on-one, right? Yeah. That was unquestionably on him. And amid the other times that he had gotten dunked on, they just decided, hey, you know this guy that we really, really like and who actually is in good position but just can't play the ball yet because he's a child who's being thrown into the deep end of the NFL, and how we preached all this notion of patience and, you know, it's going to be a roller coaster and up and down. We're not going to do that anymore. We're going to bench his ass for Jair Brown, and he'll do the same thing, except not be as good in the run game. Though I thought Jair was
fine. Doesn't have the same speed. I mean, Jair did make a couple really. I would disagree. Pops. I would push back. Oh, you're saying Siegel will be worse in the run game than Jair?
Siegel was really good in the run game.
Okay, well, I would just say Jair had a couple really great tackles in the run game this game.
And he did have a couple of really great tackles in the run game. Siegel has a couple of great tackles in the run game too.
Right.
Except I think Siegel fills holes better. Sorry, that's pause. I think Siegel's a better gap filler than Brown is, because Brown is starting to do that thing again where he tip taps thinking about it instead of just going and hitting it. And I can appreciate being a smart football player, but not at the detriment of actually being in the position you need to be in. And he started to do that there. So I did not understand playing Brown over Siegel, to the level they did, which was ubiquitous, just entirely. And what are we going to do now? Flip flop. That's not good.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much it's benefiting you. I mean, I guess teams attack Siegel, and so there's an element of if he's off the field, at least they're not going at you the same way. But I don't know. If you watch that tape and you watch that touchdown where they went one-on-one at Brown, I feel like teams would attack him. So
I mean, the first 2 weeks of the season, it was just teams attacking Brown, which is why Siegel ended up getting the job. And then they attacked him, and he did better. But then there were, you know, one really bad play on top of a couple times where, again, he got dunked on. But, like, that's the process of being a young player. And so, that again, Jair Brown's been in the league for 3 years now. Why are we holding him to the same standard as – or why are we holding him to a lesser standard than a rookie? Like, I don't get that. And I don't know why I keep saying we, because it has nothing to do with me. But I feel upset about it.
Do you want to get to some questions here?
I absolutely do. Let's start with we'll cash late. Okay, we'll cash now. No, it's fine. That's on me for being a bad director.
This one's more for you because Purdy's numbers aren't great in come from behind situations.
No one's numbers are great in come from behind situations. You're having to throw the ball when they know you're throwing the ball. But the fact of the matter is that Brock Purdy can make something out of nothing, and Mac Jones sure as hell can't. We didn't talk about this. I want to talk about it now, Mac. And I don't blame the guy. He was under siege. And there were some pass pro reps that were legitimately comical. Like, really
the worst of the worst of the season.
Unquestionably.
In every facet.
Unquestionably. But Mac never came off the first read. I mean, when I said that D'Amico Ryans was giving him the halfback pass, that swing route, the entire game, I meant it. He was always open. And Mac would just lock in on receiver one and wouldn't come off it, probably because he knew if he got to two, he'd be dead, which sometimes he would have, sometimes he wouldn't have. I can understand why he was locked in on one. But if this guy's super skill, the reason that we talked positively about him, and he earned this, but the reason that we talked so much about him, like, hey, Mac, like, this is pretty good, this is happening, is because he could process and get through five reads and actually see the field and stuff. I get that when you don't have protection, it's hard, but you got to get to two and three, buddy. You got to, especially when two and three are wide open, being given to you because they're blitzing a lot. Like, you got to get there. He didn't get there. So then you don't do that. Well, okay, can you tuck it and run it? No, you can't. He did once. It looked fine. It also looked physically painful.
Yeah.
Like, so this is the thing. This is why Brock is different, because Brock can process at that level or higher, much higher, frankly, off of this past game. But he can also make that offensive line look better by being able to manipulate the pocket with his feet. He can scramble. You can boot him out a lot easier. There's a lot more of a game plan. And I thought Mac was better later in the game when he decided, I'm going to start ripping this thing a little bit and started throwing it. It were not tight windows, but tougher throws. And he had a couple of rips. That's the Brock
Purdy
experience.
Yeah, and Juwan dropped that deep ball, too. That was just...
Well, don't even start me. That's the same play they ran earlier in the game, but with Sky Moore, who stopped running halfway through. He's awful. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be this pejorative, and I know that everyone gets on me for being negative. Yeah. This is my game. He is awful. He is awful. I'm turning into Mag Dog Russo here. He's awful.
You think it's I think they might run more Watkins next week, just out of, and it felt like getting him involved a little bit late. I know he dropped it, but it's also
whatever.
His first snap. It's hard to get on a rookie.
Who didn't drop one?
they trusted Ronnie Bell forever, and he couldn't hold on to a thing.
I mean, I'm not saying I do remember Ronnie Bell. I'm not saying Jordan Watkins is going to be anything. I think that a lot of people got way out over their skis on that. They went all Wises on them. The way, I'm just going to bring it up. This clickbait bullshit has got to stop. It's got to stop. You're embarrassed. And you know what? It's not even on them because it's working. And all they need is the eyeballs. It's not on you, because if you're here, you're a discerning connoisseur of football conversation. But like, you got to tell your friends to stop clicking on this shit. I saw two
posts. The one that got you? What was the one that got you? It was the Hennessy one?
It was, Matt Hennessy. The 49ers have a new center and he's elite. What the fuck are you watching?
Oh, we didn't even talk about that.
Hennessy,
we didn't
was
even talk
awful.
About Yeah, Matt Hennessy.
He doesn't
was,
know the plays. He's the center.
It's pretty clear I know people, we talked about it, and I said last week, let's hold off on sort of crowning Matt Hennessy over Jake Brendel.
Because there was some good, there was some bad, right?
He's clearly worse.
Oh, my God. It's like the preseason all over again.
Yeah.
And listen, Houston is not an easy start. I'm going to give it that, right? It might look better moving forward because Houston's defense. Congrats to all the people who thought that they actually weren't that good. You all look like assholes now, too. we look like assholes plenty. Don't get me wrong.
Generally speaking, yes.
No, anyone who was in the comments being like, I don't know why you guys are all glazing over Houston's defense. That's why. But
yeah, Will Anderson towards the end of that game was just started winning every single rep in a way that was pretty comical.
Jake, there were two reps in this game that I noted, and I'm sure there were more.
Was one of them the one I posted where both tackles got driven into Mac Jones, and then both the center and left guard also lost, and Pooney was the only one who held up?
That was a good one. There were two other ones. There were two plays. One was Danielle Hunter. I believe it was Hunter. Sorry, I only watched on the all 20, the high one. One was Hunter. The other one was 72, the defensive tackle. I forget his name.
Maybe it was Togiai. Was it Togiai where he got through the middle?
Togiai got into the backfield so fast and had Mac Jones squared up, right? And Mac
could have sacked him, and Mac went, there was a freeze frame moment.
He could have broken every rib in his body on a legal tackle. Like, it couldn't have been easier. He was a crash test dummy standing there. And he just went, oh, it's a trap. And he stopped running moving at the quarterback because he thought it was a jailbreak screen. It wasn't. It was just horrible blocking. And Mac was able to scamper out of it.
It was Hennessy putting an arm out to nothing and Togiai completely untouched.
I mean, and Jake and I are trying, because we're just such idiots and dorks, we're trying to break down where the breakdown was.
Right.
And we're like, oh, I think McCaffrey, because they blitz six, and it was like half a coffee house stunt, because they blitz six, I think McCaffrey needs to stay in because Kittle's already on the out and he should be the hot. Meanwhile, there's a 350-pound man in front of the quarterback.
I will say, did you notice we haven't talked too much about protections this year, and we talked about it all last year? We haven't talked about it too much this year.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I just am noting the fact that it's being brought up now with a backup center into the mix. So maybe that's a way.
Are you
maybe
saying
that's
Jake Brendel had the best rated?
No, we noted, I think, sometimes where the protections weren't great.
I will say, I didn't expect Hennessy to be a very good blocker, right? He's a backup center. He shouldn't be playing off of his preseason performance. Like, that's right. Fine. Okay. I expect him to get his ass kicked a couple of times. I don't expect the man who sets the protections to not run the scheme. And that's what it looked like to me, where he didn't know the play. You're the one calling the protections, brother. Right.
And it definitely seemed like Mac knew what the protection was supposed to be that was called and went, what's that guy doing there?
There were a couple of plays where Mac has had to do a lot of aligning at the line of scrimmage this season. There was one where he had to get Juice aligned. And I'm like, that's a red flag.
That's not a good sign.
That ain't good. Because what were we saying after the Atlanta game? Simplify for everybody else, make it complicated for Juice. So when Juice is like, I don't know, you're like, oh boy, this is no bueno.
Yeah, this is insane. And another reason you should subscribe to the Hutch Report.
That's the dumbest fucking thing I've seen
PFF
in a
grades
long time.
Had Will Anderson lower than multiple. If you have it open, because we don't pay for it anymore because it's so bad. Who were the other linemen? I'm just curious.
How? Will Anderson had a defensive player of the year performance in that game.
By the fourth quarter, he was genuinely winning almost every single rep.
What on earth are these people watching? Okay, I have actually talked to some people about this. There is a suggestion, and it's probably derelict in duty for me to mention this. There is a suggestion that PFF has outsourced all of their grading to, they've outsourced it. They've outsourced it to India.
Well, I've seen ads on like LinkedIn and other stuff.
It has been suggested to me that that is actually like the case where they're like, and now they have this sort of rubric that you just watch and do it. And by the way, this is how Opta, the soccer analytics company, works, where they've outsourced to, like, I think it was Malaysia. But a little bit different. Listen, I got no problem. I'm sure that the Malaysians can break down soccer as well as an Englishman or German or an Iraqi. Like, everyone except Americans, like, they know soccer, right? It's the most popular sport on the earth. Where else do they play football besides North America? I know Roger Goodell wants it to be Europe. It's sure as hell ain't India. I don't think we're getting a Delhi game anytime soon. Though, you know, don't give them any ideas.
I'll be there in a month or two.
If you can find Jake, this is now an investigative trip. Go find the PFF office.
Maybe I will. Maybe I will. Joseph asks when we lose to the Giants, is it fire sale time? I don't know who you're selling, but
that's exactly right.
I do think that's a perfect time if you can. One of the receivers, whoever. If someone wants to trade anything for Bourne or Jennings, that's the time. You could make a case, or you could say DeMarcus Robinson. Sure.
That's an interesting idea. I don't mind that. I'll ask this, though. Because of the injury to Juwan Jennings, who is consistently the name brought up in this circumstance, he was not going to be good for the rest of the year, right? He broke 5 ribs, has 2 ankle sprains.
He's in pain.
Yeah,
he should only be playing on third downs.
Right. It should really be third and one. So, he has more broken ribs than he should be playing reps per game. Like, that's what
he has as many broken ribs as they have wins.
So it's like rings in a tree. Just every win, another broken rib. But suffice it to say, like, I don't think anyone's giving up anything for a broken, soon to be free agent Juwan Jennings. That said, Juwan Jennings can make a reasonable argument in the free agency market that, like, hey, my body be broken. That's why I wasn't good last year. You should give me money because my body be fixed. Is he going to get anything more than they could get on a comp pick?
Probably not. Probably not.
So I don't think they're going to trade him.
Yeah, I'm trying to think who else you could possibly trade. They just don't have a lot of options. I mean, they have no depth, so it's hard to think.
I think that there's a very logical case to be made for selling people. Again, with you, who the hell are you going to sell? Because you can go to the nuclear option, which is where I'm sure plenty of people are going to go. Like, why don't we trade Kittle? Fuck you.
Right.
Like, idiots. Idiots. Like, you can think we're idiots, but at least we don't stoop to that level of bullshittery. At the same time, they have to make a trade this week, right? They have to acquire like a or several defensive ends.
A human being, yes.
Have you put your hand in the ground and rushed a passer at any level above ACC football? We got a job for you in Santa Clara, California. The economy's booming. Like, don't worry about Intel down the street. Like,
right.
We're good. We're keeping the Santa Clara economy afoot with all these new hires that we keep making. Like, they have to get something. They have to get something in-house, because you cannot go into a game with Michael Williams, William Bradley King, and Robert B. That's it. Those are your three. Yeah,
they physically just need to. They need to acquire someone.
I don't even know where you go. Like, I don't. They've run out of guys. William Bradley King was the last resort. That's the guy that they had on the Malik Turner in out plan.
Yeah, maybe. Hey, you know what? Maybe you play bump up Sebastian Valdez and you put Alfred Collins at 4 or 5 technique. Who knows?
I mean, you're going to have to be a 3-man front.
Yeah. Hey, maybe they should just change the scheme.
Just Chris Kocarek will die. He will play defensive end himself before he switches to a 3-4.
That's a way you get Nick Martin on the field. That, honestly, Galaxy brain idea, you switch, you fundamentally mid-season change.
You Belichick the shit out of this.
Yeah.
Old Belichick, not new one.
Some people have mentioned that Cleveland Farrell has worked out today. Snevin says he does meet the "hey, we know him" criteria.
Come on down, you get a jersey.
I used to play here? Sure.
Clee Farrell is the most guaranteed signing since they worked out Stone Blanton for the practice squad.
100%.
Lock it in. Yeah. He's already on the roster in my mind. So that's one. You need 3 more.
You need 3 more. Symmetry points out that Yeah, it is clear that YGM does actually exist and is missed. Even in his very limited snaps, he was doing a real job as a pass rusher. Part of that was over the guards. Most of it was over the guards, but he was doing a really good job.
They can't do anything cool and interesting and different. They can't make any they cannot create any chaos because they don't have their house in order because they don't have enough dudes. Yes. And so YGM actually is probably, you might think, and listen, I think it's an accurate and fair take. But the thing is, we have never seen YGM in just a straight, can you do a normal person's job role?
Right.
We've only seen him in the let's get really weird and throw him out there like a Harlem Globetrotter.
Remember role. The start of the season where they just had
they were just doing all cool these guys shit.
Doing cool shit? It's tough when you don't have any players left.
You can't do cool shit when you don't have cool players. Yeah. How many times have I said that on the show? At least five.
Let's go. Khan asks, is the secondary not up to par because of the communication or talent? I would say most of it's communication. I think they do have plenty of talent. I think there's a level of talent that's not meeting realization in terms of players like Upton Stout or players who are coming back from injury.
Or this guy, D'Amador Lenore, who...
I mean, he had a good rep against Jaden Higgins down the sideline. He had a pick.
He'll give you a good rep. He'll give you a good rep. He'll also give you, 20 yards of penalties a game and some absolute disaster class.
There was one that Upton Stout just got. He committed a holding penalty because he got rocked so hard off the line of scrimmage, like 10 yards down the field, that he just held the guy because otherwise he would have fallen straight on his ass, so he had to hold on. It was pretty bad.
The Stout thing is, so I mentioned this in my studs and duds column for the Merc. Like, the Stout thing is weird because you can see the 49ers panicking in real time with Upton Stout, where they benched his ass third quarter.
Maybe I think he got hurt. He got hurt. This is what we had last time where we said he got benched and then he was hurt, which happens multiple times a game because he's smaller than I am.
Fair. Well, regardless, he had been playing to the point where it was a fair assumption that he had been benched. Right,
it's not like a did they really? It's like a I think they benched him.
I think he's not out there. That makes sense given how he had played. The same time, he also pops on tape every now and again. He's just popping in both directions, and this is what you would have expected. And we talked about this early in the season when everyone was playing really well. I'm sorry, we need to.
I need to pull this up because Benali finally came back. Sam O, Kalia Davis, Travis Gibson, and Michael Williams all got higher grades than Will Anderson got.
What?
That's crazy.
Okay. Sorry. I'm doing this right now. Jake, you do have say in this. You can veto it, but I'm putting this out there right now. We're never mentioning PFF on this show ever again. Ever. It is verboten. If you bring it up in the comments, you're banned.
Well, you're not banned. You don't have to ban people.
No. We rule with an iron fist.
No, Jake. We're not banning people. We're just not acknowledging it.
PFF does not exist. It is a useless. Anyone who wants to use it is viewed as adult in my mind, which, get in line. Jesus Christ. What? What? That's more offensive than the Michael grades early in the season.
Yeah, that's insane.
That is far more offensive. What sport are they watching? That's like saying Stephen Curry is an okay shooter. Like, what are we talking about? Shohei Ohtani? He's okay. By the way, I had to explain Shohei Ohtani to my mother.
How did that go?
It was incredible. I don't think that we do this enough where we just put ourselves in the mindset of somebody who doesn't know anything about this and doesn't really care. And having to explain Shohei Ohtani was really enlightening because I'm like, and she's like, oh, and he pitches? Is he any good at that? I'm like, he's awesome at that. So he's the best hitter in baseball. And he's like one of the 20 best pitchers. And he kind of makes all the other baseball players look like shitty athletes.
And unfortunately, he's also like adorable.
Yeah, he's the best. He's the best. He might have a gambling problem, but who?
Sure.
That's America.
Yeah. By the way, I went to Japan and every poster is just him. Like, he is the president. He's just wearing like a nondescript suit, not really advertising a product. It's just him.
Otani.
Just him. And
it's like, that's our like president. Bluey's the president of Australia.
Exactly.
Joe Paralyne.
You just
I currently have a Shohei Otani sponsored thing in my fridge.
You also just reminded me that we haven't done our thing. Worst game you've ever seen.
Go.
So mine, of course, I have to answer this in more of a nostalgic, stupid way.
Love it.
But mine will be June 8th, 2003. The Mariners beat my New York Mets. The first baseball game I ever saw. The Mariners beat the New York Mets 13-1, featuring a solo shot from Cliff Floyd. But what I remember most about it is it was two things. One, it was the first of a doubleheader.
Nice.
First of a doubleheader. I said, can we stay for the second half of the doubleheader? Our tickets are valid for both. My parents went, not a shot in hell. We're going home. We're going home. I remember seeing Ichiro, which was incredible. And I also remember there was someone intentionally let a ball drop. It was like a pop fly, and they intentionally let a ball drop and then like turned two on the Mets. And I went, our team's not very good, is it, Mom? And she went, no, we have a third baseman named Ty Wigington. Let me read you the starting lineup. We got Roger Cedeno. I remember him. Ty Wigington, Roberto Alomar, classic. Cliff Floyd, the sweatiest head I've ever seen on a human in my life. Jeremy Burnitz, who's my go-to trivia answer for anything related to Mets and Mariners.
Love it.
Jason Phillips, Vance Wilson, Joe McEwing, and Al Leiter, who gave up 8 runs in 2 innings.
They just kept him in there. You get to suffer. That's brutal.
Yours? What's your worst game ever?
I am preternaturally good. As negative as I am as a person, I'm very good at wiping out a lot of context on the negative games. Like, I will forget. I will Men in Black having watched it. I'll give you two. One, which is honestly the most like deflating thing I've ever seen firsthand. Oh, fuck, there's a third one. Okay. On the Thresholds, worst game I've ever been to and experienced. Mizzou played Kansas State. It was 38 degrees and raining heavily the entire game. I don't remember anything that happened. It's the coldest I've ever been in my life. That was it. I don't remember if Mizzou won or lost. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
It didn't matter. That is the worst weather I've ever been in. And I've been in some, I grew up in Chicago. Like, I've been in hurricanes. I've been in some nasty stuff. I can go back.
Freezing rain is the worst feeling in the world.
If it was 5 degrees colder, it would have been the most glorious, frolicking day. And instead it was just a steady 38 and raining. Happy birthday.
It stays with you for like 2 days.
Yeah, no, it stayed with me my entire life. Worst game that I've covered. There are a lot of these. I've wiped out most of the 2017 season.
So have I. I forget a lot. People mention stuff that happens in some 49ers games, and I go, I have no recollection of this, and I was there.
I would just blanket statement, any C.J. Bethard game is a good one.
I got
one. Yeah.
The Trey Lance Chicago Super Bowl.
Oh, that was a bad one. You could also go the 9-0 Niners. I think it was 9-0 Niners win in Washington.
Yeah, but that was at least like fun bad. Like,
yeah, that was also the day my daughter was born. So, day before.
So you're remembering something else?
That I remember. We ended. I remember finishing my column for that game and turning to my wife and saying, "Okay, we can go have a baby now." That was the prerequisite.
That's great. Sorry, Joseph asked another question. 1v Russ trick shot, last who wins. I'm obviously destroying Dieter in this, I think.
I don't understand the question. I legitimately don't understand the question.
You never played Call of Duty?
No. No, yeah. I'm very bad with the other joystick. I get dizzy. Like, I have bad, like, I legitimately get dizzy. I can't run and aim at the same time.
That's your answer, folks.
So I'd win, obviously.
Meanwhile, I used to do, every one of my friends used to sneak home after middle school and we'd do quick scopes after school. And then I would listen for when the garage opened because I wasn't allowed to play Xbox during the week. Right. And my mom would hide the controllers, but I would find them. So then I would listen to the garage and go run. Yeah. Get and then run upstairs. She's like, what are you doing in the basement? I'm like, doing my homework down here.
Masturbating. Just masturbating.
Yeah.
So, no, my buddies would all play Halo. I was a PlayStation guy because heaven forbid I ever fit in. And so I didn't. But my game in Halo was, they'd be like, hey, dude, you want to play? And I'm like, I'm not very good. So I'd just run around. And you could never get me. I was really good at that. I was really good at running around. Learned those maps quick. Okay. That's the worst game I've ever been to. Worst game I've ever covered. Any CJ Beathard game does get a blanket statement of yes. But also, 2023 NFC Championship game. That game was supposed to be awesome. And then it just immediately was not. And we just had to suffer through all of the possibilities coming to pass. And they were not good possibilities.
Was this yes. Yes.
It's like you're in Philly, you're amped for this game, and it's why that game the next year felt so big. Like, it's why that 24 regular season game was humongous, because, like, it's the NFC Championship game. That should feel humongous. And for Brock Purdy's arm to be, for them to put him back out there, because
The fact that Kyle didn't let Juice just run the triple option still makes me mad.
They're still kind of pissed. I mean, I talked to a lot of guys in that locker room afterwards, and they were, and this is why I will give a lot of deference to that. Like, they, the guys in that locker room after that game, pros. And I remember who wasn't, and I remember who was. Like, pros. And Debo, for as much as I got on Debo late, pro at the end of that game. And was a, that's why he wore the C. Don't look into anything further I said on that note. Regardless, it was just absolutely humongous because they felt like they had the game plan for that game and they could just never manifest anything. And it was like watching, the Make-A-Wish kid actually have to play a competitive basketball game when they just wanted to go one-on-one with like LeBron. And LeBron's like, no, we're, who was it? Was it Cardale Jones who would go play video games with kids in the hospital and whoop their ass like 120-0?
Yeah, I mean, I think, didn't LeBron do that? I don't know.
I think it was Cardale Jones, which is, that's like a fun quirk, but imagine like if he wasn't like a goofy guy. Like, imagine if like...
Yeah, he's on TV now, pretty funny.
Cardale Jones?
Yeah, Cardale Jones is like doing TV on Saturdays. It's very interesting.
Okay, and then there was one more. No, don't have it. Forget it.
That's it. All right. Well, one more thing. Someone at Pooney was better this week, and someone asked, Chucks said, would you place Barch at left guard and Burford at right guard to let Pooney rest his week? I think I would just, I don't know, just keep Pooney as it is. He was better this week, but not incredible.
They'll play Barch over Colby.
I think they should.
All right. Go. Okay. End of stream. Bye.